This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
Hang in
Dude,
there, it is.
That's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome back to The Smiley Show. I'm Charlie Hume. Smiley Kaufman's joining us from the road today. As we are, Smiley, we're in between cups right now. We just wrapped the Walker Cup. I'm back home. I successfully navigated a red-eye flight coast to coast with two young children, almost three and almost one, and I'm here living, you know, talking about it. So that's a big win for us. It's huge. It's big for me. It's big for the show. We're headed towards the Ryder Cup, Smiley, and we have two big events on both tours, the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour, that serve as sort of a prep for that this week. First and foremost, last time we talked, I believe we were looking at the participant list, the Pro Corps, and we were wondering why Xander was not playing this event. And we owe a big congratulations to Maya and Xander Schauffele on the birth of their son, Victor. How about that?
Victor with a K?
Victor with a C.
Okay. Just curious. Had to ask.
I feel like that's the more common spelling. I feel like, is Victor Crumb from Harry Potter? Is he a K guy?
Doesn't Victor Hovland spell his name that way? No?
Victor does spell it. He's a K guy.
It's Ryder Cup season, so I had to ask.
Well, it's one of those things where if you name your son Victor with a K before you're about to play Victor Hovland in the Ryder Cup, is that bad karma? Like, did he have any choice? Did he have to go with the C?
That's a good question. I definitely think it's a bit of a mind game for sure. You know, I don't know who wins on that side of the deal, but it's definitely worth talking about for sure.
Maybe we'll get to that in the Z's of the rundown for the show. The absence is on either side this week. We had Victor Hovland not playing in this event, as well Bryson DeChambeau, of course, barred from playing in PGA Tour events via his status on the LIV Golf Tour, but was there for the team dinner, which is another thing we'll get into on this episode. And the Sepp Straka on the European side, not there. Smiley, we were in the year of storylines. We were so close to another amazing storyline. The U.S. team goes on this team trip to Napa. The Keegan Bradley facilitates, gets all these guys to play in this fall event they don't normally play in. There's a bonding dinner at the French Laundry, this elite restaurant in the area. And Ooh. Then how good would it have been if the Ryder Cup rookie, Ben Griffin, the guy people are asking questions about, is he going to step up to the challenge, would have made it to a playoff with Scottie Scheffler, the undisputed number one player on the planet. it would have been too good to be true.
Oh, gosh. The only thing that you could have thrown in there is somehow if Bryson was out there following everybody. Just understandably that he was there on site. I didn't know if we were going to actually see an appearance from him this week, knowing that he was in town. I'm not sure how long he hung around, but still, it's a nice appetizer. I'm saying like just the perfect, you know, what's your go-to appetizer that you see on the menu that you're just like, yep, that is,
man,
that is it. And I feel like that's what we got with the DP World Tour and the Procure event.
It was perfect. Yeah. I mean, what's a go-to appetizer? I'm trying to think of what mine, you know, it kind of changes on cuisine. I did have some of your Kaneka sausage, redneck charcuterie this weekend at the tailgate. So that's top of mind right now. But you're right.
You're looking at the menu and you just think, okay, this is my favorite appetizer to order at a restaurant. So maybe not quite serving in your own home or, you know, expecting to eat at somebody else's home. One that you get on a menu and you say, yep, that's the one every time.
Isn't that cuisine dependent?
It can be. If it's obvious that if you're like Mexican restaurant, you're going to go like chips and guac, chips and queso, chips and salsa.
Are you queso or guac guy?
Queso. Yeah.
Also queso. Yeah. Married to a guac woman. Tough for me. Got to make a lot of decisions every time we order chips. Yeah.
that sucks. I hate that for you.
Yeah.
That is, you know, Amanda's got amazing qualities, a lot of them, but that is, that's one that we got to question.
She's a guac person. You know, look, it is what it is.
But I will say sometimes a really good guac outkicks an average queso.
I agree with that. Queso is,
you there with me there?
I'm 100% with you there, because queso is usually the safest option in terms of just overall deliciousness. You know, it's melted cheese. I mean, it's about as good as you can get. It's hard to mess sure. up. You throw a little spices in it, that's fantastic. Guac can vary greatly because it's all, what are you doing with the avocados once you've scooped them out? And Amanda actually coincidentally makes a fantastic guac. So it's nice when you do a little homemade action, a little bit of lemon, some seasonings. But you can get a bad guac at a restaurant. You can get an overdone guac. They're trying to make it too crazy.
So I'll say that us Kaufmans, we love a good experience. And if I see the guy at the table as we walk in making the guac table side, done. All in. It doesn't matter if queso's on the menu. I am all in on a good experience. You know, I want to know how long this guy's been making the guac, what's his secret, the way he does it, because I want to try to go do it at home to replicate how good this guy's guac is. That's something that needs to be said as well.
Tableside guac is great marketing. It's showing me visually, hey, you got to have this thing. It's happening all here right in front of you. It's as fresh as it's going to get. Honestly, I'll go guac and queso at a restaurant like that just to see what the deal is on. You know, I mean, if they're serving guac that good, the queso's got to be good as well. So
Fran says, like, one of my worst qualities is that I am very bad about ordering the second queso right before our food shows up.
Mm-hmm.
She says that typically I just rip through that first thing of queso, and then all of a sudden I'm like, gosh, I really could use like a couple more bites of queso. And so, you know, this is right around the time I'm ordering either that second beer or second margarita. So everything just feels like it's making sense. Next thing you know, the queso comes out. You got the next drink that comes out. Meanwhile, here come the fajitas, and you're thinking to yourself, who wins this battle? You know, where do I go next? Because now we have a triangle that needs every bit of attention and detail.
This is how I know that this partnership works for us, is that I've just learned you're also a fajitas guy. Fajitas is...
Francie's much more of the fajitas person in our family than I am.
Okay.
But I am settling in on my go-to order at our Mexican joint, and it has like fajita steak, fajita chicken, but it's not necessarily like, hey, I want the fajitas. It's, you got to kind of order. It's like a specialty thing you order at our place. So it makes you feel important. Maybe it's not quite the sizzling smoke that comes out where you kind of feel like you smell like it the rest of the night, but you still get the, you know, the good stuff.
I just like you're bringing me all your freshest ingredients hot, and you're letting me make some calls to how I want to assemble it. That's what I love about fajitas. So,
doesn't it kind of scare you though with kids at the table when they got that hot skillet that comes out and things just sizzling a little bit? And it's, you know, obviously the wind of the smoke that is just absolutely just, you know, wailing on everybody.
You know what? I hadn't really, I think I'm just now realizing, I don't know that I've been to a proper fajitas joint since we've had kids. So I don't know that I'm able to try it. So this is something that, you know, I guess I got to report back, Smiley. I think we just did like 6 minutes on Mexican food, which is, I mean, amazing. Love Mexican food.
Next week we're going to break down our favorite appetizer at a Greek restaurant. And we're just going to continue to hit every single, cultural dining place that we can. Italian the following week, Americano the next, and here we're just gonna have everybody hungry.
It was not so many months ago that I was tomatoed off the stage for giving out recipes during a one and done pick segment on our Instagram live. So I'm just glad that we've come to this level of acceptance for food items on our show.
Congrats on your one and done win this week. You and I both.
Did we? Yes. We took Scotty. We took Scotty.
If Scotty's playing in the fall, I'm taking him. So congrats to you and I.
There you go. We did it. That, I mean, it is, by the way, a little intrigue on that point. Scotty's sixth one of the season. So I think before the year, I think you said four.
I went back to listen to it because I thought I nailed it. I thought I said he'd win three times in two majors, and I said two times in two majors. So The over-under I set on the year was 4.5 for us at the beginning of the year. And I end up taking the under. And you took the over. And not only did you take the over, you tried to parlay it into an alternate line.
Okay. I said 9 and or 10. I said somewhere in that range. And he's at 6 this year. And I think we would give him the century if he was if he hadn't cut his hand. So now he's at 7.
Oh, now we're just giving him events.
And then if you go on the PGA Tour profile, it's going to list if they win the Ryder Cup, that's going to be listed as a win, and he's going to win the Hero. So I mean, I think there's a world in which my prediction was pretty on the money. I had to bring that to your attention.
It was a tough scene when we finished that West Coast swing, and we start to think about how. Many events Scottie Scheffler plays in a calendar year, and I was sitting pretty, you know, with the two majors and two wins. I'm thinking, hey, if he gets hot, this looks pretty good. Meanwhile, Charlie needed Scottie to go full Tiger 2000 mode, and not only that, he needed the Xbox or the PlayStation, whatever game you played with Tiger.
Yeah,
and you needed
control
to boost,
the spin in the air.
You needed to like boost all of his skills as well to be able to try to chase that number you were looking for.
I mean, I it is pretty stunning that two of his wins this year are at the CJ Cup, Byron Nelson at the Pro Core Championship. I mean, admits that I guess CJ Cup is close to home, but that's a pretty. Just throw some new ones on the calendar. I don't think he definitely would not have played this event if it wasn't a Keegan orchestrated Ryder Cup type of thing. And here he is.
No chance. Yeah. I think reading a lot of the pressers this week from the guys, there was a lot of tired puppy dogs that were napping this week. I think a lot of players kind of were just still probably exhausted, and this was probably good for them to show up to play a golf tournament.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of these players would have still had their clubs still in their club glove in their garage and not even have touched their clubs till October.
Yeah, I think, and we're going to talk a little bit about some unique prep happening on the European side, but I think, you know, the way that both of these events have become a tune-up of sorts for
sure.
Each individual team, I kind of love it. I mean, it's a fun way to see these guys knock some rust off. And then, I mean, on the American side, I don't think it gets any better than your number one player on that team undoubtedly winning the tournament. And then a guy who doesn't have a ton of experience taking it down to the wire. I mean, I think the missed putt of the 18th, obviously there's going to be some talking about that. There already has been on Golf Channel, the post game sort of recap. But I think this worked in terms of what Keegan was trying to achieve and preparing this team for Bethpage.
I kind of want to know what the vibes were of if they're all staying in one house or they're staying at separate houses. You imagine that there was somewhat of a community where the guys were gathering at night, let's just think that they were, right? Let's say we have team dinners like you're talking about. Everybody's going to hang out after. What is the vibe? Are guys talking about winning the golf tournament? Are they talking about the Ryder Cup? You know, is Ben Griff really quietly like staring at Scottie Scheffler and not blinking for the entire evening? And like, hey, like I'm not going to lose to you tomorrow. Like what is the vibe like? What do you think?
It's so interesting because I felt like, and this is just someone who's watching the broadcast on the TV on Sunday, but Scottie was dead set on winning this tournament. And that's not a shocker to any of us who've watched Scottie Scheffler play golf and know how competitive he is, but it felt like when we kind of got down the stretch, this wasn't just a Ryder Cup tune-up anymore. This became, you know, everyone was very, very serious about winning this tournament. And you know, the question you're asking, I'd be curious to see how that spilled over into the camp, but I think the competition between these guys is only going to help kind of stoke the fire. You know, if you're talking about guys that needed this week, to your point, guys that are a little sleepy, knocking off the rust, they kind of shut it down since the Tour Championship at Eastlake. You know, feeling that feeling of being in contention can only help get the mind in the right place for 2 weeks when you show up and you're ready to go. You know, I mean, it's just nice to kind of kickstart it a little bit, I think.
I think so. And you see a lot of guys at the top of the leaderboard and guys that have been playing well all year. You know, Ben Griffin, this was just a validation week for him. You know, if you watched the golf tournament or if you didn't, I caught very little of Sunday because I was flying over here to DC, got something here tomorrow. So I really didn't get to catch much of the Sunday golf. All I saw was the 18th hole. I saw that Ben Griffin three putted. Obviously, that's unfortunate, but still, Ben Griffin, dude, man, it's just the belief that this kid has and the amount of confidence and just the I guess too, the one thing I wanted to look up and I didn't know how to look it up, But this entire year, I wanted to know just where his average was of where he ranked inside the top, whatever in the field throughout a golf tournament. Ben Griffin hardly was ever outside of the top 25. Let's say after the first round, I feel like he never, ever was outside the top 25. He's a player that consistently was on the first or second page of the leaderboard. He hardly ever played bad rounds this year, and he was close to being in really elite company with being the third guy to win three plus times this year with Scotty and Rory. JJ Spahn, obviously incredible year, Tommy Fleetwood too, but I mean, Ben Griffin is right up there too with having a just one incredible year.
Oh, undoubtedly. And I think this is kind of, there were some people that were asking about his pick, his inclusion on this team, you know, is one of the guys that maybe take Keegan instead and have him play. And I think this is a nice validation. Response to the 100% it is. Smiley, we're by virtue of this conversation, it's leading us into getting into the spirit of the cup. Thanks to our friends at Johnny Walker. So Smiley, we've talked about this on the show before, the Spirit of the Cup Tour brought to you by Johnny Walker. It basically sounds like a giant Ryder Cup party with golf activities that is happening in New York City the week of the Ryder Cup at Bethpage Black on the streets around New York City from Wednesday, September 24th through Sunday, September 28th. It's an experience that is open to the public, which is amazing. You don't have to have, you know, a ticket or anything. You just chip your way to glory while sipping signature Johnny Walker cocktails. And they have merch out now as well. Capsule with Devereaux featuring polos, hats, t-shirts, cardigans, and a crossbody bag. And then here's the coolest part about it to me, Smiley, is that as part of Johnny Walker's commitment to progress, proceeds from this whole Spirit of the Cup merch and cocktail kit, all the sales there are going to benefit Fairways to Leadership, a national nonprofit dedicated to advancing access to leaders and leadership opportunities through golf literacy to build the next generation of diverse leaders one fairway at a time. So how about that, buddy? Yeah, Johnny Walker, Spirit of the Cup, man. We're getting the Spirit of the Cup here.
Yeah, well, New York, right around the corner, just crazy how fast Ryder Cup is sneaking up on us now. Especially with seeing the DP World Tour guys too. They were boarding a flight, going to do a scouting trip. I believe they're going to be playing Bethpage the next couple of days. I don't know if U.S. is doing a scouting trip. That's actually interesting to me. I doubt they're doing one. Oh, there you go.
While we're doing it, yeah.
But with Europe, they're flying. They finished this DP World Tour event, all flying over, doing a scouting trip. And so I think U.S. guys going all the way to the West Coast, I'll be interested to hear if they actually do make a scouting trip. Part of me thinks that they're not, and that they'll just get there on Monday and just kind of play nine holes every day, just not wear themselves out. But interesting to hear about it.
Yeah, I mean, interesting to think about, like, what sort of access maybe those guys have had to Bethpage and the lead up. You know, I'm sure a lot of those guys have made their own individual scouting trips, you know, and maybe more accessible for those guys. But the Europeans, on the European preparation side, something that greatly interested both of us. This is after the conclusion of the Rory McIlroy's round on Sunday at the BMW PGA Championship. He revealed that Luke Donald gave VR headsets the team on Tuesday earlier this week. And here's a quote from Rory. "It is just to simulate the sights and sounds and noise. That's the stuff that we are going to have to deal with. So it's better to try to desensitize yourself as much as possible before you get in there. You can get them to say whatever you want them to say, so you can go as close to the bone as you'd like." I have so many questions. Are we generating AI insults, or is there someone hired to like provide a menu of insults for Europeans? And you know, can we do like a New York accent? Is it a Boston accent? Like, how are they inputting insults into this VR experience that Luke Donald's created for his team? I need to know so much more about this.
Do you know how much fun it would be to be on this a VR team that had the design process of Bethpage? And then, wait, hold on. Luke Donald sends an email. It's like, hey, do you guys mind sending, you know, about 10 to 15, whether it be, you know, slurs or if it's something that might upset a certain player? Do you mind just inserting that into the software and just have it kind of randomly play? Can you imagine being on that team, being able to write those, whatever it is, the scripts, or be able to plug it in, and all of a sudden you got a guy shotgunning a beer and literally like virtually getting hit by a beer can, you know, whatever it may be. It's
that's great. That's
the
great.
Options are endless. But the New York accent's a good call. Maybe getting hit by a pizza, you know, like that's
yes,
a little slice of pizza.
I need to know the full menu of options, like how far Luke Donald took it, where he's in development with this company. He was like, listen, these are the things that I think they're going to do. So like if it's a pizza, getting hit with a beer can, you know, here's the insults they're going to use. And can you adjust on the fly to Rory's point? You say, hey, that was pretty weak. Like, give me an insult specific to a certain region. I need to know everything about this program. I love this so much. I think it's hilarious.
Have you ever done like VR golf? Is that something?
Never.
Is it like Wii golf? Is that kind of how it works?
I guess it's like, I've actually never even used a VR headset. Have you used a VR headset ever?
Yes, I've had one, and you end up having to get something other than like an Apple phone. So you had to go and get a, I don't know if it's like a BlackBerry, Android, or whatever it is. And so I had gotten one as like a tea gift for one of the events I played in. I'm like, well, crap, I got one of these things. I want to use it. So we did, and it was like, it was pretty cool to cruise around that thing, but we didn't do anything golf related on it. The thing I loved to get on was getting into a tank with sharks around. And it was the most wild thing ever that I would just be turning around. Next thing you know, there was like a shark attacking me. And then the other one too. Yes. Very much real. Like it was a problem. I'm a very jumpy person when it comes to getting scared. And so they have like also like these haunted houses that you can do. And so the haunted mansions were really fun to virtually walk through.
Yeah.
But still like those were dicey too. I hated that.
I mean, I feel like this is, so as someone who's never used a VR headset, and I've seen, you know, digital recreations on YouTube of people playing golf in a VR world, but obviously I'm not getting the full experience they are because they're, you know, they have that's the whole point of the headset. So, I mean, I don't know. I think I've actually seen Rory with some affiliation to a VR company. So I'm sure he's played VR golf, maybe as part of this whole thing with getting Luke Donald set up with whoever built this program. Like assuming it's a standalone program, because I don't know anything about this thing. It's amazing. But I guess, you know, I don't know. I just don't know how you go about. I get back to the same place, which is like, I have so many questions. Like, are you actually playing around? Or are you partnered with, like, is there virtual Shane Lowry in there? Is he like giving you words of encouragement?
I think it's for the guys who haven't seen the golf course to get a sense of what the place looks like. So just starting to imagine what these holes are going to look like before you get there. So that's step one. I would say the other part of it, at least from actually a productive standpoint, you would think that Luke would try to, if it's a noise thing, you know, after you hit a shot, they just crank in sound noise like you're playing in what y'all's kiddie football stadium called.
Keenan Memorial Stadium. Thank you for bringing that up. It was rocking this week. It's rocking for the Richmond game. Yeah, big one.
So y'all have to crank in sound for y'all's game. So like, of course. So the sound crank in. Maybe that's what these guys are hearing after they hit the VR shots. I don't know. But those would be the two things I would think of. It's like, what do the holes look like? And can we maybe get after you hit a golf shot? If you hit a bad shot, having somebody say you suck after. I don't know.
I've used, you know, PGA 2K to scout courses I'm playing in the future before. So that's not a foreign concept to me, but I just, you know,
that's totally understandable. I don't think anybody and their mother would say that's a weird thing to do. I think a lot of fellas have probably done that before. If not that, they've gone to YouTube and seen every single hole before a trip they've gone on.
What's the over under on the number of players on this team that are actually going to use this thing and or maybe need technological help from somebody else?
I'm picturing every single one of these guys on the flight from London over to New York. Everybody's VR, got it on. Yeah. Everybody's got it on.
I feel like I see Tyrrell Hatton trying to use this thing, getting very frustrated and breaking it.
I see them warming up with it on Friday morning, everybody in the range with it.
That'd be,
we're not hitting balls. We're just going straight VR.
Yeah, that's right. They're like, are you working on your sight lines? Like, no, I'm just listening to insults right now. So I'm seeing the fans. I've seen all the great people of New York, and they're bringing it right now.
These Knicks fans, man, they're crazy.
I think this is the way we discussed and kind of just mowing through both events this week is like, let's do this in chronological order. Let's do some quick hitters on every player that played this weekend that is going to play for either the European or American side in the Ryder Cup. So we will start with the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth. And by the way, shout out to Alex Noren, won this thing in a playoff. He's won two of his three DP World Tour starts the past month. So, Alex Noren playing good golf.
He's so good at golf. I've told you this before. His short game is unbelievable. His chipping, bunkering, guys. I just remember watching him at Memorial last year. Xander Schauffele just following him around, just asking him questions on how he was doing it. He's a wizard. Yeah. So when I saw he had to get up and down at 18 to win in that playoff, which, by the way, if you had a chance to watch any of that, I have no idea what Adrian or Alex were trying to do going for the green there in that situation. But Alex got a good lie. It was an easy, fairly easy up and down. He was never not getting that up and down. So, yeah, to your point, he's had a really good year, dude. Really good year. He's had four top tens in his last five starts. I actually felt like Alex Noren was a dark horse player to make this team, and that around that same time is when I realized that Rasmus might make it on points, and Marcus Paige and Alex Noren were the two players that I felt like if the Højgaard brothers didn't make it, I felt like one of those two guys had a good shot. But they actually asked him, Charlie, I don't know if you saw the interview, it was actually a great question, just asking about, hey, if one of the guys happen to get sick or somebody gets injured, are you going to bring your clubs with you over to Bethpage? And he said, no, I'm going to leave it up to these guys. And, you know, I really felt like all 12 of these guys had better years than me to this point anyways. So he was pretty dismissive of that whole argument. But I did tweet out. I said, hey, if we need a 13th match or a way to divide or decide the cup, if it was tied at the very end, let's send out the captains. Let's send out Noren and let's send out Keegan Bradley, two players that are inside the top 20 of data golf that somehow aren't playing in the Ryder Cup. Well, let's just let those two guys get figured out.
I love that so much. I mean, it's pretty amazing to think that he had that extended layoff, didn't start playing competitive golf again until May because of the injury.
Yeah, I think it was hip, maybe.
That sounds right to me. Yeah. And in data golf right now, he's the 12th ranked European in the top 12. They do their own sort of set of rankings. He's ahead of Shane Lowry, Sepp Straka, Tyrrell Hatton, Justin Rose. So for what it's worth, I mean, he definitely was in contention to make this team. But I know that he won the Betfred British Masters, and then the following week is where Rasmus finished, where he needed to finish the Omega event, and solidified the last spot on the team via qualifying. The rest was sort of history from there. So let's go through this team just kind of by the best finish all the way down to the worst finish and just kind of hit on some of these guys. So we had a group of three players who tied for fifth at 15 under. Tyrrell Hatton, who his pairing is sort of we're just guessing on these pods, but his pairing earlier in the week was Robert McIntyre. Victor Hovland also finished tied for fifth, played with Rasmus Højgaard earlier in the week, and Matt Fitzpatrick, who played with Ludvig Åberg. What do you got for us on those three guys, Smiley?
Hatton, you said Hatton, Hovland, and who? It was
Matt Fitzpatrick. Yeah, all tied for fifth at 15 under.
Based on what, I caught the very end of the DP World Tour broadcast and just kind of listening to some of the notes of these, at least the guys up top. Well, Victor at one point definitely had the lead of the golf tournament. It felt like Victor actually was going to sneak his way to the top of this leaderboard. Didn't necessarily go super deep on the weekend, but had a good first Thursday and Friday round. Hatton, putter went a little cold is what they said. And Fitzpatrick led the field in birdies, but just had too many bogeys. So Fitzpatrick's been a guy I think it's just been trending in the right direction. Similar to Cameron Young, I think two players that I think have played their way into form that might get to play more than, let's say, three matches. I could see Fitzy playing his way maybe into another if he's able to maybe go win a match. But his Ryder Cup records has not been great. But Tyrrell Hatton has been, just solid as a rock for the most part over the last 5 years. So I expect so much out of Tyrrell this Ryder Cup. But Victor's, I think, driver is my biggest question mark. Driver and putter, really. Victor's going to hit enough really good iron shots, but if he's paired with a good putter, watch out, especially in that foursome stuff. But I worry about Victor's putter in closing out some matches coming up.
The next kind of moving down the board a little bit for to 13 under, tied for 13th, John Rahm, who was paired with Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry to open up the week. Thoughts on Rahm? I played this week.
Dude, he just, what's his deal with just like backdooring good finishes, like in anything other than a live event, like majors, DP World Tour? It just seems like he's not near the top of the leaderboard as much on like Thursday, Friday. And then he just has like a, it's like the Xander Schauffele formula that he had for years, which is like, oh wait, Xander finished in the top 10. What? Oh, he shot 600 today.
Cool. He went 71, 69, 69, 66 to your point.
Yeah. I'm not saying he does that every week, but,
right.
Yeah, obviously a good Sunday. Same for Rory McIlroy. Eagled the last hole again. So look out for Rory making big putts on 18. He's kind of addicted to doing that in September right now. So that could be something. I know Luke Donald would love to see, is making putts on that that 18th hole at Bethpage, which is a crazy, crazy difficult green, really. Ludwig, solid first Thursday and Friday, but kind of tailed off on the weekend a little bit. But I feel like he's a player. Hold on 1 second. About to sneeze.
Here we go. Here we
go. Hold on. First sneeze on the pod.
Here we go. Is it coming? Are we doing it? Okay. I think we're clear of the sneeze now.
We're good.
No. Do we dodge the sneeze?
I could just fought that off. Wow.
That was impressive. Highly impressive. Yeah. Okay. How about on Rahm? This is the thing that stunned me. Is on the DP World Tour, the leaderboard deal online. They list the OWGR, the player, in the far right column. He has the worst world ranking of anyone on this team.
Who does?
John Rahm, 80th in the world. Isn't that crazy? Well, that's correct. Sorry, I was thinking that there was Sepp Straka.
Oh, Joaquin. I didn't realize Joaquin played.
Yeah, he sure did. So then, okay, let's keep going on the European team. We have Ludwig and Rory both tied for 20th at 12 under. Ludwig played with Matt Fitzpatrick. Rory McIlroy, of course, as mentioned before, played with Shane Lowry and John Rahm. That's on Ludwig and Rory.
Shane has had like a couple of decent weeks. I mean, nothing that's been necessarily poor, nothing that's been super great. Kind of a lot like how his season's gone, which has been close to being, you know, a little better than maybe how it's kind of turned out from a result standpoint. So you have to wonder, with Shane kind of coming into this this Ryder Cup, is he going to be able to get enough out of his game to take on whoever he gets paired against? You know, I just wonder with who's going to be the X factor with the guys with experience. Like Justin Rose has got a ton. Mm-hmm. Shane Lowry, he's got obviously not as much experience as Justin Rose, but not a bad week. And Rosie, I never look at Justin Rose's results in events and think that, oh man, he's not in form. He's not going to be able to turn it on. That guy, if you get him, and if he's anywhere close to dialed in, it is, he all of a sudden turns into the Terminator.
He elevates his game more than, I mean, like his ceiling I should say more than higher. Anyone else. His ceiling is so much higher in the big events, in the majors, whenever he needs to kind of really step up and face the spotlight, he undoubtedly does it. You know, playoff events, you know, obviously one of those is here. So yeah, he had a bad Saturday this week, shot 76 on Saturday, but I don't see this as being a real issue, you know, for him. I think he's going to just give you some very clutch veteran moments on this European team, as he always sorts of do. So you talked about Shane a little bit there. He was
Brooks Koepka missed another cut.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So Billy played.
Billy played. Nice. Yeah. I mean, and I'll just, so Shane and Tommy Fleetwood both finished tied for 46 at 8 under. Justin Rose tied for 61st at 6 under. How about Robert McIntyre played, he missed a third round cut because there is a DP World Tour rule that if more than 84 players advance to the final round, the field can be reduced a second time to 78 players on Sunday. He was one of the two unders. He shot 71, 71, 72, played with Tyrrell Hatton. He is one of two players that Rasmus Højgaard missed the real cut. Rasmus Højgaard played two rounds. Bobby McIntyre played three, but both those guys missed the cut. Any worries there for either of those guys?
I think Rasmus is, there's a ton of question marks for me for him at the Ryder Cup. And I think he's got the lowest floor of anybody playing in this Ryder Cup. Now, he also has a ceiling that is higher than a good amount of players. I just have no idea what you're going to get out of him. He's a little erratic at times. He hits it much further than his brother. And I think he's much more suited to play this golf course than Nicolai is. But I still have my question marks whether his game is going to maybe carry itself to that highest level, because I think you and I both really have a ton of respect for his game. I think a lot of players do too that have played with him. He's really, especially with how strong of a player Nicolai has been over the last couple of years. You know, Rasmus was a player that I think we just assumed wasn't quite as good as his twin brother. But really, when you look at it, it's crazy to see that both. I mean, to have two twin brothers make a Ryder Cup team, that's just, I mean, bizarre, right?
I know, like in rotating fashion, the other one, you know, 2 years later, I think.
And you could have picked the other one.
Nicolai could have easily picked the other one. I think both these guys are. And Rasmus had a great start to the year where he was in a lot of events playing well, where Nicolai maybe wasn't either in the event or playing as well as he was. So I think that, you know, over the course of the year, maybe he cooled off a little bit, and that's why he kind of had this late situation where he needed to qualify at the Omega, the event in Switzerland. But I think that, I share the same sort of, you know, he's the last guy on the team in effect. Like, you knew the other 11 guys that were going to be on this team, and maybe this is not the tune-up you wanted, but, you know, I think I don't expect him to play more than three sessions maybe. So you get him the right partner and a guy with some experience. I know that did Justin Rose play with Nicolai in Rome? Do you recall who played with
Nicolai in Rome?
Was it Robert Rose. McIntyre?
Justin Rose and Bobby Mack play together.
That's right. Maybe Ludwig once. I'm trying to think.
Man, I don't know. That's a good question.
I should have this pulled up. Yeah.
Nicolai.
Here, let's filibuster for me while I go. Here we go.
I think it's right. Tyrrell Hatton.
We're gonna do some live trivia here.
I think you play with Hatton. That's what I'm gonna go with.
Okay. All right. Let's see what we got. He played with John Rahm, having a match with Scottie Scheffler and Brooks Koepka. And then let's see.
Come on. So give me Hatton.
Played with Tommy Fleetwood.
Okay.
Lost to Homan Harmon 2-1. Played singles against Xander Schauffele and lost that match 3-2. So that was three sessions, half point.
Shows you what I know.
Shows you what I know too. Forget everything I said, I guess. Let's go over to the American team at the Pro Court Championship, Silverado Resort in Napa, California. I love this little nugget on the eventual winner via Nick Piastowski's story on golf.com. Scottie Scheffler said he's never been to Napa, nor is he much of an imbiber of its biggest attraction. Don't really drink wine, he admitted. So that's your guy. That's your man. So who won. Scottie seems like he's just a beer guy, right?
It feels that way.
Man just wants an ice cold beer anytime he can get in his hand. Start at the top of the list, guys. We open the show discussing Scottie Scheffler, Ben Griffin, 1 and 2 on this leaderboard. Some of the discussion that we saw after the fact was, does this create any sort of seeds of doubt about Ben Griffin's ability to close? You know, I mean, it was effectively a match play type situation. Do you worry anything at all about that after the 3-putt on the 18th hole on Sunday?
No, my only takeaway from this is that how can you find a way to get Ben Griffin in foursomes? That's my biggest question, is how can you get the golf ball that he plays into foursomes? Like, who can play the max fly ball? Because he has proven to me that he needs to be out in that first session Friday morning. He's proven it time and time and again that it doesn't matter the stage. He's going like his flight. I know we keep on talking floor and ceilings, but so much of this is important because you want to know a guy's not going to go out and shoot, you know, I guess in foursomes, it's hard to really know score wise, but you know, something that would be considered an over par performance, like Ben Griffin's going to go out and at least be even or better in whatever his shot value is. That is good enough to win matches. Like you can play average and win matches. You can play good and lose matches in Ryder Cup, but I sure as heck wouldn't have Ben Griffin sitting that Friday morning.
So that's a huge takeaway, really, where it's like he's got to go out first in this thing. I mean,
I think so.
Yeah,
he's playing. I just there's just too big a sample size this year And he just has not played poorly. I don't like, maybe it'll happen Friday morning at the Ryder Cup, but he's got experience winning the Zurich Classic this year also in a very similar format with mm-hmm. with four ball. And also, I know it's not exactly the same alternate shot style, is it? Because it's the modified thing, right? You hit your drive and they both hit it. Is that? Are they both hit tee shots? Is it actually alternate shot? Yeah, it is.
Yeah. It's effectively, in effect, the same format there as it is for the Ryder Cup. Yeah.
Well, there you go. He's got experience winning on the PGA Tour this year in that awkward format.
Yeah, I agree just on form alone. I mean, if this is, I'll be curious to as we get to the end of this list or get through this list to see if there are any guys you feel like, not necessarily play their way out of an appearance in that morning session on Friday, but just guys that have a little bit of work to do to convince Keegan that they're ready to be one of those guys. It feels like Ben Griffin now is at the front of that line, right? So
I think JJ Spahn has played his way into that morning session. I think JT
finished sixth, I think JT
and Morikawa, this was their audition to play Friday morning. And I think both guys, I think you go look at their stats, go look at, you know, how they've been playing relative to their score and stats. I just don't see how either of them go out Friday morning.
Yeah. I mean, so Cole Morikawa ties for 43rd at 5 under. Justin Thomas finishes 69th at 1 over. Cole Morikawa, we talked about this a lot on the show, just a season of change of a lot of things. Another new putter in play this week. He has it's a TaylorMade Spyder Tour V. It is center shafted with a single dot sight, but it's important to know that it is not a zero torque putter, despite the fact that it's center shafted. So he says he's been doing a lot of work on it. I'm sure he and Stephen Sweeney have been working hard on it. I trust that, you know, he's as prepared as he will be, but it's, you know, it's just, I'm, you know, it's a putter change that we're seeing for the first time 2 weeks before they're playing the Ryder Cup. I mean, I don't know how you feel about it.
Yeah.
It feels like, you feel the same way about Colin, you feel about JT. These guys are probably not going to play in that opening Friday morning session.
I don't think so. Maybe they will. And one of them will definitely have to play a little bit above how they have been playing. Not to say that they didn't have good results any point in the end of the season. JT played really well at the Tour Championship, but it's a fairly open ballpark. So is Bethpage. You can kind of get away with some misses, where I think JT, this is a good track for him to be able to go kind of manage some misses. And I think what was concerning this week is that his iron game was so poor. It's easy to just look at, okay, what did they do well this week? Well, that's kind of what I'm looking at. You know, we can look at the entire year, how they're hitting it and, or how they're putting and how they're chipping it. It's totally different grass is how they're going to play this week versus Bethpage. But still, this is as close as we're going to get to the Ryder Cup and what their form is going to be. So I think it's fair to look at this and be like, okay, well, can these, you know, Keegan was watching all week. He's got the same stats that we're looking at, you know?
Right.
And so I don't know. I think that I would be surprised at this point to see JT or Morikawa go out in the morning. Doesn't mean that they're not going to have good Ryder Cups. Just means that they either need to play well in the practice to have all the vice captains say, like, dude, this guy's really turned around. He's playing way better. He's figured it out. I think there's going to be a lot of that. And I think the U.S. team's probably going to have to find a couple of those guys to play their way into, hey, dude, this guy's like really kind of got it to click. Or if not, they need to be concerned.
So if you feel like, and let's just make a list now, we got Scottie Scheffler, Ben Griffin, JJ Spahn. There are three of the eight that you feel like are going to go out on Friday morning. And then Bryson and Xander, I feel like those guys are close to locks, right? So that's five. So let me give you the list of the remaining players of – So Cam Young finished tied for 9th this week. Then you had Sam Burns tied for 13th. Russell Henley tied for 19th. Patrick Cantlay tied for 30th. And Harris English.
Yeah,
Cantlay, Harris, Henley. Cantlay, Harris, Henley. There you go. So you have Sam Burns, Cam Young, Cole Morikawa, and Justin Thomas setting.
I think you could flip-flop Cam Young and Harris. That would be the one. Because Harris doesn't have any foursomes experience, so I could see I could see Cam going out too.
And you know, Harris probably, you know, didn't have the week he'd like to, was you know, didn't break 70 at all, 72, 70, 71, 70. So, I mean, not to say I think he putted better than, you know, the majority of the field. So that's a nice, you know, potential pairing strength. But I agree with what you're saying, especially with Cam Young once again.
Yeah. So Sam, Morikawa, JT, and Harris, or I think are the four that'll sit.
Sam, Morikawa, JT, and Harris. Yeah, that makes sense.
That's my guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, I mean, Cam, again, good approach play. Putting was above average. You know, yeah. That putting was so good.
I like all four of the guys in the afternoon. Yeah. It's so important to get off to a good start. And not to say that Harris, I feel the best about of all four of those guys to go out in the foursomes.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We're obviously going to continue to preview this thing and do it with the help of our friends at Johnny Walker. So we appreciate the getting in the spirit of the cup here on the Smiley Show. Smiley, one more to take us out on the Pro Corps is one guy who is not on this Ryder Cup team, but likely will be on a team in the future. How about Jackson Koivun? Ties for fourth, playing in the final group with Ben Griffin, 16 under, fresh off winning 3 points for Team USA at the Walker Cup at Cypress Point. He just in this last couple of months alone, ties for fifth at the Wyndham in August, ties for sixth at the ISCO, ties for 11th at the John Deere in July, and then has this T4 this week. He's made 6 of 7 PGA Tour cuts this year, 3 top 10s, 2 top 5s. And I went to the PGA Tour U Accelerated site, Smiley. I think they stopped tabulating his stats once he got his card. I think he might have like 30 PGA Tour U Accelerated points at this point in time. It's truly unbelievable stuff. I mean, how good is this from Jackson this week?
Well, I thought he was going to Nick Dunlap it real quick. You know, if there was a time to win a PGA Tour event, it would be right as the semester got started. And just a quick heads up here, guys, we got Jackson Koivun coming on the show here very quickly. In fact, we interviewed him before this Pro Corps championship, sat down with him for about 20 minutes ahead of this tournament. And I asked him some questions a little bit about, his year he's had, the Walker Cup, and, you know, what it would take for him, you know, just with a decision, how settled he was in not turning pro and playing college golf. And I had this odd feeling this week, Charlie, that Jackson was going to have a chance to win this golf tournament. I said it to you before, and then I just kept on sending screenshots throughout the week. And little do we know, he's in the final pairing with Ben Griffin on Sunday. Just incredible. The kid's got moxie. He's got everything you want. He's 5-tool player, man, and he's obviously good enough to play on the PGA Tour right now. The only thing that I wonder is Nick Dunlap told us this, and I wonder if this got fixed. A top 10 doesn't apply to him, correct? Like for him to, if he wanted to go play in Jackson, that doesn't get him into Jackson, correct?
They said it on the broadcast as he was finishing. They said it like he was in.
I know Kurt Sanderson said that, but
Sanderson.
But we learned from Luke Clanton that was something that was not not the case. So I wonder if we'll see him in Jackson next week. I there's no way, dude. He's played Walker. He's got to go to school at some point.
That's literally, I was going to say that is, I forget if he said this in the interview.
We talked about it on the pod.
Yeah. Like basically his biggest issue right now in his life is getting PGA Tour events counted as excused absences at Auburn University. I mean, it's literally, maybe a top five on a PGA Tour event will help with some teachers. I don't know, but I wonder, do you think at what point does he start reconsidering his decision? And can he, that's something I'd love to look into as well, is like, can you just cash that card anytime you want to?
I mean, what has he played his way up to from a world ranking standpoint? That's a great question. Like, is that updated yet? Do we have an updated world ranking?
I don't know if we'll have it for this week, but we can certainly have it for last week. All right. I'm going to look for you while he's not in the top 100. So there you go there.
That'd be crazy. Has there ever been a college kid who's in the top 100 in the world? That would have been interesting if so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Clan was at one point before he was still an amateur. He was like 93rd. He's 262, but okay. That's not updated for this week. So he
after
should move
T4,
up.
Yeah, he'll be in the top 200. I think everybody, when they listen to the interview with Jackson, they can make their own, their own decisions based off what they hear from Jackson. But it seems like to me, like if you just watch him play, the kid has it all. He's got the overall game to be able to go out and turn pro now. He's got a caddy that he's worked with multiple times this year. There's a lot of comfort there. But he does have some goals he wants to chase. But, you know, I asked him a question about, hey, what else do you want to achieve in the amateur game? And that's, I think, a fair question to ask for somebody, he hasn't done like Tiger like stuff where he's won the US Juniors and the US AMs and stuff. So there's plenty more to do, but still, there's a lot to like about Jackson Koivun and his very young, promising amateur / potentially professional career coming up.
That's correct. Well, we'll get you right to that interview with Smiley breaking this down prior to the Pro Court Championship with Jackson. Must be noted. Good run for Auburn University on the show.
We got Charles Barkley, Auburn.
Jackson Koivun, Francie Kaufman, Anna Carter Kaufman. Everyone thrilled with that. Avi the Tiger, all things of that nature. So let's get you right to Smiley's conversation with Jackson Koivun right now.
All right, we are fresh off having Jackson Koivun participating in the Walker Cup, the winning Walker Cup squad from the United States. Jackson, I imagine this past week, being involved in the Walker Cup already is a dream come true for most of us golfers. But being a part of a winning Walker Cup at Cypress Point, I mean, come on, dude. Like, tell me about it. Was that just like 10 out of 10? Unbelievable?
Yeah, it was one of the best weeks of my life. Been fortunate enough to play Cypress Point once or one or two times in the past, and getting out there for the Walker Cup, it was just unbelievable. And we were blessed with some great weather on the weekend, so it was really, really
so cool. Good. I mean, so did you get a chance to like watch any of this golf tournament back on TV yet? I'm sure it was on maybe in the mornings or at night when you finished up, but the visuals, dude, like I imagine like playing the golf course, it probably looked amazing, but some of these drone shots that we were getting on like 16 and 17, the place was just immaculate. Like, you don't get to see this place on TV. I mean, it just was so pure.
Yeah, I haven't watched all of it back. I watched some highlights back, but I gotta go back and watch the full coverage.
Yeah, you definitely do, man. It was obviously an incredible week. I'm sure memories of a lifetime. And your team, too. So often you're competing against these guys, Jackson, week in and week off, just talking about the guys on your team. Like, you want to beat these guys' heads in every single week. Like, these are the guys you compete against. And all of a sudden, you're all wearing the same colors. You're on the same team representing USA. Talk about just maybe some of the relationships that were, strengthened this week. You know, guys always talk about they go play these Ryder Cups. Like, you get to see a different side of somebody. Was there somebody that you feel like at the end of the week, you feel like your relationship with them grew from just this whole experience?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like you said, we compete week in and week out, and we want to beat each other really, really badly on the golf course, and then flip a switch, we're teammates. And I played both my alternate shots matches with Tommy Morrison, and we definitely grew a little closer through that. And I feel like all my relationships with those guys grew. I was really close with a lot of them, and it was a great week to grow those relationships.
Sure.
And yeah.
All right. So did y'all have like a team room? Like, is there like a, everybody always talks about team rooms with Ryder Cup. Like, was there a decent team room here at Cypress? Was it on site? Where exactly was it?
So we had two. So we had an on-site one at Cypress where we came in the mornings, and we talked and ate lunch there. And then we had a team room at Spanish Bay, which was very, very nice. It was almost just kind of like a
– how pure is that place? Spanish Bay.
It's unbelievable. We were very, very spoiled. And
is that where y'all stayed? Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was just out there. Place is so epic.
Yeah. It's awesome. It's awesome. But we had a team room there, and it was massive. And we got a lot of eating and just chit-chatting done there.
Uh-huh. I love it. Oh, you mentioned Tommy Morrison. You played both of your foursomes matches with him. And if you've ever seen Tommy Morrison in person, TV doesn't exactly do it justice. This dude's a giant, man. He's 6'9" is what the box score says he is, but it feels taller than that. I mean, Jackson, how tall are you?
I'm a humble 5'10".
A humble 5'10". So we're talking like a full foot between the difference between you two guys. How often just would about. You be just like standing there next to him? And you know, you're obviously, it's your partner, but at some point you don't want to get too excited. You don't want the guy to tackle you. And next thing you know, you're in the Pacific over there.
it's definitely a little weird dynamic, him being so tall, but it was fun. We got hyped, and his pushes were a little harder than other guys, but I took him like a champ.
Absolutely, as you should, man. So Nathan Smith, man, obviously a legend, right? In mid-am golf. I think he won 5 mid-ams. Like, that doesn't even seem possible, but just an incredible amateur career. I've met him a couple different times, but just talk a little bit about Nathan as a captain and just, you know, there's obviously a lot of pressure with the United States, with the history of this event, how well they've done, especially over the last, you know, winning, this would be the 5th one in a row. You don't want to lose a home Walker Cup. So I imagine he had a lot of internal pressure on himself, but did you ever feel that come out in team meetings? Was he keeping it pretty loose with you guys throughout this entire process?
You know, if he was nervous, he didn't show it. I don't think we could have had a better captain. Nathan was an awesome captain. He fired us up when needed. He was loose when needed. He didn't really get in our ways. He asked for all of our opinions on things we thought. He immersed himself in the team very, very well, and I couldn't have asked for a better guy to be our captain.
Yeah, well, impressive win for sure at the Walker Cup. And just maybe just some other guys on this team, and just adding a little bit of context to a player that won the USAM this year. I mean, talk a little bit about what we've seen from this kid, man. Like, it seems like he's slept on a little bit. You know, Miles Russell's had all this conversation coming out of high school, and now Mason Howell. God, I'm sitting here like blanking. Like, this is 33-year-old brain here that's been changing too many diapers. I'm sitting here trying to remember what his name is. Mason Howell. Jackson, how good is this kid? How good could this kid be?
So I didn't get to play a lot of golf with him, but from what I heard and what I saw, he's pretty damn good. And he impressed me with the way he played, with his maturity out on the golf course. Obviously, he's 17 years old, or I think he's 17. It was impressive to watch him on the range hit the golf ball. I don't hit the golf ball like that. I wish I did, but he was very impressive this week to me, and someone I got to get to know a little better. And obviously, like all of us, at 17, I think just the more he matures, and he'll just keep getting better and better, and he'll be a problem in college golf.
Yeah, there's plenty of great players, of course, that played on this Walker Cup team. And you've accomplished so much in your amateur career to this point. And by the way, huge congratulations to you for earning your PGA Tour card through the accelerated PGA Tour U program. That's a tremendous honor. Only a few guys have been able to do that. You know, there was a decision to be made, Jackson, heading into this fall season. You know, you just like Gordon could have gone either way. You could go back. You can go play. But I guess what I want to ask is, after having the success that you had this season in your sponsors exemptions out on the PGA Tour and competing and playing well, did it make you think twice about, man, I'm pretty ready now, but choosing to come back this fall, was it? Do you have any sentiments about going back and playing this fall at all?
For me, it was a no-brainer to go back, especially for junior year. Obviously, seeing how much money I theoretically could have made kind of hurt, but at the end of the day, I think gaining those learning experiences and getting another year or two with my boys at Auburn, I think that's worth a lot more to me.
And we had Charles Barkley on the podcast. This, I guess, as you're listening to this episode now with Jackson Coyman, we had Charles Barkley on this week. But actually, we're recording in the same day. And I actually had Charles Barkley record a question to ask you today. So, Charlie, if you don't mind getting this question rolling, let's send it over to Charles Barkley.
Hey, Jackson. Charles Barkley here. Hey, man, number one, congratulations on a great, great career. Number one, I'm so proud of you to be part of the Auburn family. My question is, what is the difference of intimidation playing against college kids and playing against pros? I know it's a little different, but I just like to get your perspective. And War Eagle.
intimidation between college kids and the pros. That is a very, very good question. I would say college players, it's very intimidating because they're fighting for guys they know and they love, for their school, and these 5 or 6 guys they play with every single day and they work hard for. Whereas you get out on the PGA Tour, they're fighting for a job and they're fighting for a livelihood. So whichever way you want to take that, it's just two very different intimidation tactics to me. And they both want to beat you equally as bad, but just for different reasons.
Have you found yourself intimidated at all when you get out there and you're in contention at PGA Tour events and you're amateur? I guess when you're playing as an amateur in these professional events, do you feel that same level of nervousness that you feel in college events? Do you feel like college golf has prepared you to go out and win on the PGA Tour?
I feel like it has. I definitely did feel a little bit of nerves, but I like to think of nerves as something I can't control. And if I didn't have nerves, then I wouldn't care. Yeah. So it shows me that I do care and that that's just something that's special to me. And I still feel those same nerves in college events, and just being able to perform under those nervous situations has definitely helped me prepare for the PGA Tour. And hopefully when I get even closer and closer in contention.
Has life changed at all for you, Jackson, just from a just an overall, I don't know if celebrity is the right word. I don't do you feel like you're being noticed more by people in Auburn? I mean, I seriously just left a small group where it's like, yeah, dude, we got this Auburn group chat and look at all these messages we're sending about Jackson Coivin, because I was saying I was about to go interview. And I imagine that the Auburn community is probably, you know, wrap their little fingers around you just to try to, you know, support you as much as you can. Have you kind of felt that a little bit more over the last year?
Definitely a little bit. It's really cool going to all these events and just hearing War Eagle, no matter where I'm at. I mean, I was getting War Eagles at Cypress Point, North Carolina, Moline, Illinois. It's like, it's everywhere. So I definitely feel that love there. Here and there at Auburn, I still get it. And I wouldn't say I'm a celebrity on campus.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. You got all these football players, you got quarterbacks. Like, are you starting to get the same frat guys that are maybe taking pictures with, you know, Cam Coleman? Are those same dudes now coming up and taking, like, hey, do you mind if we take a picture when you're at Mama Goldberg's? Like, is that happening? Like,
it's happened maybe once or twice, but nothing too crazy just yet. And I gotta keep growing.
Auburn's keeping you humble and honest, right? Yeah. They're keeping you humble and honest. That's good. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
What's your Mama Goldberg's order? Surely you've been, right?
Gosh, I haven't been in a while. I think I actually went for breakfast the other day.
I didn't even know they did breakfast.
It was pretty good. But
so you're saying I need to go to breakfast. Go check it out. Golly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those nachos, man. They actually brought a Mama Goldberg's location when I was at LSU to Baton Rouge, and it was the best thing ever. It's right next to my apartment because I was trying to put on weight. And if you want to put on some weight, go eat some nachos with peppers every day.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so Procure Championship. You didn't just go home. You went just up the road to Napa, playing in another PGA Tour event. And before we talk about that, there's a player playing this week, talking about JT. And we were just kind of texting a little bit during the Walker Cup. And it's like, hey, have you played at all with Coivin? And he's like, yeah, played with him in, I believe, practice rounds at the U.S. Open. Correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. Couple different practice rounds. Is that right?
Played the Monday, Tuesday one with him, yeah.
So Monday, Tuesday practice rounds with JT. And I'm sure JT normally, for the most part, we'll always play with some pretty good players as well in these practice rounds. Talk about just maybe what you learned playing with JT and other pros in these Monday and Tuesday practice rounds, just kind of picking their brain. Or about the game.
I played Monday with JT and Jordan, and then Tuesday was just me and Jordan. But it's just cool to see how they go about their business. And they really dissect a golf course. They really know and figure out where they can miss the golf ball. Mm-hmm. I think that's just something I could learn from them. I mean, obviously, they all hit it so good. But at the end of the day, it's not where your best shot's going to go. It's where your worst shot's going to go. And how can I still score from there? And that's just something I've been trying to figure out as I keep getting the opportunities to play out here.
Is there any like certain shots that you've tried to kind of add to your arsenal as well that you've seen players on the PGA Tour have? You're like, I want to add that shot to my game.
Just wedges. I mean, their wedges are so good. It's, I'm pretty good at wedges, but it's just something you can always get better at. And like inside 150, you can make so much money in that area. And, just keep hammering those TrackMan combines or those just Foresight games I do by myself. And it's just, it's a complicated but easy thing to do. And it can be very tedious, especially for a guy like me. But I know if I can just get to 100 yards and feel like I'm going to hit it inside 10 feet every time, I'm in a pretty good spot.
Man, I didn't have the when I was playing on the PGA Tour, I had the GC Foresight quad. And everybody always used to come up to me and ask me, it's like, hey, what is that box you got there? And like, nobody else had these things. Like, this is back in 2016. I'm like, dude, I don't know. I turned it on and I hit my shot. I guess how far I hit it and it pops up right there. It's pretty simple. And then 3 or 4 years later, everybody on the range has one. And I should have gotten some royalties on that thing. And I didn't even know they had, I didn't even know Foresight had like a combine thing, but I knew the TrackMan did. Is what is Foresight's thing? Is it like on screen?
They have like a little, they have like a little app you can use, and it's pretty good. I'm a little biased towards Foresight since I have an NIL with them.
That's right. My bad. Yeah. We'll leave it. Yeah. We'll leave you right there, pal.
Yeah. So they've got an app that's pretty useful.
Gotcha. Perfect. What do you think of Napa? Played a couple practice rounds. It was always one of my favorite golf courses. It's narrow, and when it gets firm, the place can kind of get a little dicey at times in some places.
Yeah. So I played one or two amateur events here in my junior career when I grew up in San Jose. So I didn't play yesterday. I just practiced, and I played a couple holes today and not in the Wednesday Pro-Am tomorrow. So going in, only seeing 18, which is completely fine with me. I get to rest and practice, and golf course is good, really good. I think there'll probably be some low scores, not shocking. Just got to keep it in the fairway, and greens were a little soft today, which was surprising. They got some rain this morning, so that might change a couple things here and there, but it's in great shape as always.
Well, best of luck out there in Napa this week. And one last question I want to take you out here with is, so for a player like yourself who has accomplished just about everything that you can in amateur golf, sure, there's other big events that I'm sure you can go and try to win and win another national championship, whatever it might be. Are there certain things on your list that you feel like you haven't accomplished yet that you would like to? And is there anything too with your game throughout this season that you're looking to maybe improve just a little bit more? I know you mentioned wedges, but if there's anything else, I'd be curious to know as you kind of get ready. Well, potentially, I guess you can do whatever you want to do, but before your senior year, you'll have another decision to make.
Yeah. So the only thing I feel like I'd really like to do is win an individual national championship. I've came close, got second and fourth. Still haven't crossed that one off the list. But overall this year, my goals are just keep getting better in little things. I think my chipping could get a little better. Mm-hmm. These guys are wizards out here chipping. They make up and down from everywhere. So that's another thing to really, really get at and something you can always just get a little better at. And just tightening up my irons as much as I can, and then using these college events to just go keep trying to get wins and build confidence as I go into that decision for my senior year.
I love it, man. Well, best of luck to you. And what's Auburn football's record this year? What are you giving me on the way out?
I'm hoping 9-3.
Will that be enough? Will that be enough for the bid? Like, is it depending on who you beat and who you lose to?
We play Alabama and Georgia at home.
Those are two great home games.
I'll be there for both.
Great.
Good for you. If we can beat one of those, lose one of those, and then lose two big games away, I think we might have a chance. But
you need a good football season, man. When Auburn football gets rolling, man, it gets fun to watch, especially for a guy that gets to go to a lot of games. Sometimes not by choice, but I do get to go watch the games, and it's the atmosphere gets pretty electric.
Yeah. We're ranked for the first time since 2021.
Wow, that's a nugget.
Yeah,
that's a nugget. It's
24 on the AP poll.
they're trying to get it rolling on the Plains.
We're trying.
Trying to get it rolling. The basketball team's been carrying the stake a little bit. Yeah. All right. Well, best of luck to Jackson this week, of course, at Pro Corps Championship and the college season this fall. Be looking out for you. And to the Auburn Tigers. I mean, I got too much Auburn today. I got Charles Barkley, Jackson Coivin. I got my daughter running around in a cheerleading, Auburn cheerleading outfit, reading Aubie books. I just can't get away from it here. All right, Jackson. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
Well, Smiley, great conversation there with Jackson Coivin. Man, he's fresh off yet another top 10 in the PGA Tour event. It's third this year. So good show, Graham.
What do you think, Charlie? After re-listening to that, what do you think? You think you should turn pro?
Because we taped it prior to the interview. I mean, we taped the interview prior to the tournament. And I feel like, I mean, I get wanting to stay in school, especially if you know if you're making money there via NIL, whatever else. But at the same time, it's like if you have a PGA Tour card, like, do you go? I don't know. I mean, I'll say this, and this is all because it's up to his total personal preferences, what's going on in his world. But he clearly has a game to succeed on the PGA Tour. I mean, it's like we saw with Luke Clanton a summer ago. I mean, you don't finish top 10 numerous times on the PGA Tour without the game to make it on that tour. So whenever he's ready to go, he's going to be ready to go.
I think his answer to the question on, you know, what else do you want to accomplish in the amateur game? And he says, you know, win a national individual title. That's something he wants to do. He's finished top five twice. You know, that would definitely be a mile mark that would be worth hitting. But he could play in another Walker Cup. Being not many people get to play two Walker Cups. That's a pretty cool experience to go and play a LaHinch. It sounds cool to us because we're golf trip guys and going to play LaHinch sounds pretty fun.
That's right.
But still,
that begs the question as to whether he'd stay. It's not till September. I mean, he wouldn't stay amateur until next September, don't you think? He's going to play his junior year and then turn pro after?
I don't know. It seems like he would just turn pro after the national championship in May. That would make a whole lot of sense. And I don't know what he's studying, what he's got going on school-wise, but it would be hard for me to want to do a whole lot of school when you look at to see how much money you could have made, how much money you can make, and going from, you know, playing on the PGA Tour to competing against other college golfers. And it's a very, very competitive landscape. Don't get me wrong, but still it's at some point, will he crave that professional golf PGA Tour atmosphere, which is just addicting when you get out there, how amazing it is. You're like this, I got my balls, golf balls every week. Like I get to travel by myself. Like I don't have to travel with the team. Like, and not to say that it's the fun. That's actually probably the most fun about college golf is that you have all your boys with you. There's nothing better than winning events, but the amount of coverage a PGA Tour event gets versus a college event, it really does kind of sing a little bit confidence wise to yourself. It's like, all right, I know I could beat these guys, but I want to keep seeing if I can beat these guys.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, if he's experienced enough at the PGA Tour level, it seems to me that he probably, there's some value add that comes with staying for another year at Auburn that he feels like he wants to enjoy that for at least his junior season. And then I think he's gone after that. And I think that makes a ton of sense. I get it.
So what do you set in the over under win wise? Are you going Scotty Scheffler in college, his college season?
Oh man. I'm not going to be held on the record for any other win predictions after my Scotty Scheffler win total.
I think one of our most other ridiculous things that we've ever said on this show was when John Rahm signed with the Live Golf League. And you and I made the most erroneous statement. I don't know if it was you or me that said, I think John Rahm will win at a 70% clip on that tour. And he like just won his first. Has he won yet on the Live Tour? And we thought he'd win literally 70% of the time. What were we thinking?
That was a truly absurd take. Although he did finish like only top 10 that entire year. And then this last year, or this most recent year,
he won the
individual championship without even winning an event. So make that make sense. I don't know.
I think he has won once on the Live Tour. I think so too.
I think he's won maybe a couple times.
It was the most bizarre. I think he's probably played 30 events maybe in Live Golf now. He's probably played 14, 15 events a year. I think he's just finished his second year. I think it sounds right. And I think he's won once. And we said, so we really would have said he's won 20 out of
30 events now. Yes. So he's maybe won one. And he hasn't even played bad. It's just us being bad at our jobs of just like not turning our brains on.
In retrospect and in our present state, not math guys. Not math guys. Not good stat projection guys. That's why we have people that do that for us who are much more adept at it than we are. So, you know, hey, you can't get them all right. All that is by way of saying I'm not making a win prediction for Jackson Coivin. Okay. No more of those coming out of my mouth. Smiley, that's all I got really for today's episode. And I mean, shoot, we got another cool Ryder Cup preview coming up midweek. I don't know. Do you talk like LSU football here? Big win over Florida, five picks, DJ Lagway, like any sort of celebration you want to take here? Victory lap?
Not really. Until we start getting that offense going, I'm not gonna talk it up yet. We don't have a championship team. We got a championship defense. We got a championship special teams, but our offense is variated the greens weight one too many times with the offense.
All right, you heard it here first. We beat Richmond in convincing fashion this week, so I like to have you know that UNC football is all the way back, 2-1. Just don't tune into the UCF game this weekend.
Yeah, Clemson might suck. So I don't know. Clemson might stink.
Georgia Tech might be good.
Gritty.
Lot of stuff happening out there. Hope you enjoyed it. And stay tuned for more Ryder Cup coverage later this week. And then as we get into, I think we have this episode on Wednesday, and then we're in Ryder Cup week the following week.
I know. Wild. Wild. So,
all right. Good stuff. Well, that's all we got. Go Tigers.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our first lovely time fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too. So please keep it up.
For all the good people on YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes. So I'm happy to come on and shoot the